and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that I fear is getting slightly too interesting. So this week, we have an extra boring episode for you to balance things out. With me this week, as always, are Alex.
Hey, Martin.
Alex.
Hey,
Alex. Do you prefer apple juice or orange juice?
Oh my God, so much pressure. Orange juice. Probably,
orange juice.
I'd say orange juice, yeah. I'd also like to thank you for taking the pressure off this week. I was thinking, I've got to be interesting, but now you've said it's a particularly boring one.
As boring as you like.
A weight has been lifted off my shoulders, so thank you for that.
Yeah. No trouble. And Robin, do you prefer apple juice or tomato juice?
Oh, apple juice.
there's no question, is there?
No
question.
No,
it's apple juice all day. I think orange juice for me. It wins. It wins all out.
Orange juice. Best juice.
Yeah.
With the bits or pulp,
ooh,
if you're American.
Oh, smooth.
No,
smooth.
Yeah, with bits for me. Add the pulp. Pulp it in.
Yeah, I'm with Martin on this.
So we, as a podcast, sorry, Robin, you've been outvoted, juice with pulp. Mm. At home, what do you like? You know, let's put a poll up. What do you like? Orange juice with pulp or without pulp? Or are you an apple juice fiend? And if you like apple juice, do you like it clear or cloudy? There's just too many options.
Yeah. Robin,
how about the best kind of juice? Love juice. Do you like it pulpy and cloudy? Or do you like it smooth?
Oh my God, Robin. I mean, Robin, I've got a question for you. Apple juice, orange juice, or battery acid?
Orange juice?
Oh,
Was that a trick question?
I thought you'd go for the battery fuel.
Yes.
No, I knew where you were going with that one, but no, we're not having that this week.
Oil?
Are we not?
A bit of virgin olive oil, yeah.
Virgin olive oil? What extra virgin olive oil?
Oh, not extra virgin, that's too much.
Okay. that's the level, that's gone too far. So how are you guys? Are you well?
I'm good. Hi. I'm good, thanks, Martin. I'm now really fancying some orange juice, but
I know.
Apart from that, I'm fine.
I'm thirsting for juice.
Good.
How are you, Martin?
I'm all right. I was thinking about apple juice versus orange juice earlier, and that's what brought up that intro, because for me, it's orange juice all the way, but I know for a fact that apple juice is quickly growing in stature. It's quickly growing in stature. Yes, yeah. I looked at a Twitter poll, and apple juice was winning, and it blew my mind. It blew my mind.
This is why you should never go on Twitter, Martin. It's you know,
cesspit hellhole.
Wow. Okay. Strong words.
I'll tell you what isn't a cesspit hellhole, and that is our Patreon page and the lovely supporters we have on there. And so I thought I'd just take an opportunity to thank the bigwigs, the big guns who have supported us through thick and thin. So I want to thank Hayden Smith, Josh Chomachek, Peaswood, Emmett Tapia, Liam Mullen, and our good friend Chris McCrate. Thank you guys for your ongoing support. Those are our gold member patrons.
Stop getting Bond wrong.
Thank you for all your support. And this week, in our episode of A Little More Interesting, we discussed our good friend Roger Stone, didn't we?
Don't call him our good friend.
Our good friend Roger Stone. Convicted criminal Roger Stone. Who this week has basically been saying that Trump should bring about martial law if he loses the election. Yeah, so if you fancy delving into the bizarre case of Roger Stone and his ramblings, head on over to our Patreon now, and you can access that.
Don't you kind of miss when political conspiracy theories were far-fetched? When you had to really reach for them? Now it's just the low-hanging fruit. Do they want a military government? Yeah. He said it.
there was a time not that long ago when will there be a civil war in America was like a debatable, a kind of a theoretical question. Now it's like, could it happen?
Yeah.
Will it happen?
Genuinely might.
Mad. It's mad. We're living in crazy times.
Those little A Little More Interesting podcasts will also be available to our lovely YouTube members.
If you're watching us on YouTube,
you can join and get access to our little more interestings.
Indeed you can. Right, on to the I'm going to say the meat of the topic, but that's what's coming up later. First, we're going to discuss what we've learned this week. So, guys, what have you got for us? Alex?
Oh, Well, I have learned that one particular part of the UK is under attack, Martin. They are being invaded by an army of chickens. And I speak, of course, about Jersey. The island, the Channel Island of Jersey, is being invaded by chickens. This is what I've learned this week. Apparently, feral chickens, a few escaped chickens, probably from like pets that people had, have a few of them escaped on this island and have been breeding and creating an army of chickens that have been terrorizing the residents. Over 100 birds, gangs, as in like there are multiple gangs of over 100 birds in each gang, have attacked joggers. They've destroyed yards. They've blocked traffic. And apparently they're waking all the residents at 4 a.m. by just screaming. And with everything going on in the world, I feel like this has been overlooked. And I just wanted to bring this terrorizing incident to the masses, you know. It's gone overlooked.
Thank you.
People say that local newspapers serve no purpose anymore. And this is the kind of story that says that's blatantly false.
Yeah.
Blatantly false. We need to know about this stuff. I mean, do you feel sorry for the residents of Jersey? I think it's a welcoming distraction, isn't it? I'd love to be woken up at 3 a.m. by chickens and be annoyed about that and be discussing that with my neighbours, as opposed to discussing Roger Stone and telling Trump that he should declare martial law. This sounds like a good news story to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit different, isn't it? I mean, it's like, imagine if this was your main problem in the world. Like, you know, some chickens are waking me up. But in all seriousness, though, like every single day, 4 a.m,
like
an army of chickens outside your door, screaming. That'd be horrible.
Gangs.
I vote that they...
Roaming.
Yeah, they need to get... What's like an animal that's kind of equal to a chicken? I want a big battle between animals.
Like
ducks.
A
release
duck,
some
yeah.
ducks.
Like a big duck, I guess.
Or a goose.
I know, chicken
probably. A big duck. One duck.
Why is one of those hypotheticals? Would you prefer to fight 100 tiny chickens or one giant duck?
Yeah.
And in generations to come, they shall refer to him as the Duck of Jersey, who saved us from the chicken plague of 2020.
Exactly. Apparently the reason for this is because there are no like foxes or natural predators on the island. So that's kind
there
of...
There are no foxes on Jersey?
No, apparently not. Mm-hmm. So, well, I mean, how would they get there?
Well, yeah, this is
an
island.
Swim
yeah.
there.
How does anything get on an island?
I mean, that's true. How did the chickens get there?
How did a chicken cross the sea?
Yeah, he probably came on a boat. And
sadly, what they obviously need to do is find and kill the roosters, right? All the males. And then they can lay all the eggs they like, but they're not going to get fertilized.
Just call yourself a vegetarian.
Hey.
You've just got to kill all the roosters.
I'm not in it for animal welfare.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Oh, that's... I mean, I hope that, that there is some peace at the end of this dark poultry tunnel.
I hope that whatever happens, they find peace.
Exactly. But, there could be some more, free chicken for people on the island of Jersey. You know, got to think about the positives of a story like this.
It sounds like KFC should open an outlet. They would make a killing.
Yeah, they would. They would literally make a killing.
They would literally do it, yeah.
I'll update you on the story as it develops.
Please do. But my sympathies, to the residents of Jersey.
Yeah.
It's incredibly important. Robin, what about you? Is yours chicken related?
It is not chicken related. Actually, looking back in the past, and I learned this week that scientifically speaking, if you go back, and this applies to everybody, every single person in the world, if you go back 7 generations to your great, 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 great grandparents, you share... statistically, less than 1% of your DNA with them.
They're basically a banana.
That's exactly
wow.
it. Yes.
Wow, that's interesting.
I mean, you only go back 4 generations to your great-great-grandparents and you have less than 7% of your DNA with them. So
weird.
Whenever...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this whole... what's interesting to me about this is that, obviously, because... ancestry, people love to know their heritage and where they come from, and that's cool. I'm a big fan of that, and genealogy is a wonderful pastime. But there's this trend recently about, you know, 23andMe and, you know, doing a DNA check and being, people being like, oh, I'm X percent Viking or I'm X percent, you know, Dutch or whatever. And people cling to that and say, oh, isn't that cool? And it's like, you're not really.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you're just shutting down people's, you know, optimism and like, oh, yeah, I've got this really cool relative. And you're like, no, you're less than 1%. Associated with someone cool.
Yeah, with your great 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 grandparents, yeah.
So who gives a shit where you came from? Your lineage,
essentially.
Your heritage, yeah. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Ultimately it doesn't matter if you're a descendant of Charlemagne if at the end of the day you spend all day sat in front of the PlayStation playing Skyrim. It doesn't matter.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, kind of. It's more important about where you're going than where you've been.
Very true. Very true.
Nice.
What did you learn this week, Martin?
Very good. Well, I learned about a silly man called Robert Emmett Odlum. And he was a swimming instructor, born in 1851.
Yeah.
And he was made famous, or made himself famous, by being the first person to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City.
Oh, okay.
And the reason he jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge was because he wanted to show to people that you would not die simply falling through the air. And so what he wanted to demonstrate was that if a building is burning and you've got to jump out of the building into the net below, you're going to be fine because you're not going to be injured by falling through the air. Whether loads of people thought they were going to be injured falling through the air itself is another question. But anyway, this was apparently what he was trying to show. The issue came when he jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge, landed awkwardly on his neck and died in the process.
So did they put a net underneath and he was demonstrating?
No net, he's just jumping into the water.
That's not a good idea, is it?
Yeah, there was a bit of a wind, it kind of spun him onto his neck, and he landed on his neck. So yeah, so he died as a result.
How high is the Brooklyn Bridge? Because that's like, that's quite high, right?
Yeah, it's a tall one, isn't it?
Like if you jump from that, you're gonna die.
Yeah. Do you think he proved his point though?
I mean, in fairness, yeah, he didn't die on his way to the water. So there's a crumb of comfort there, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. No, he died proving his point.
Yeah. He's up there in heaven with Galileo and Isaac Newton and all these people, but nobody ever talks about him.
This is true. This is true. So, should we move on to our comments, our favourite comments of the week?
Yeah.
That's...
So, I've got a comment from Valorum, who says, this was in relation to us talking about our favourite execution methods in last week's podcast.
Yeah.
And they say, my favourite execution method is called blowing from a gun. It's where the convicted is tied to the mouth of a cannon and they just set the damn cannon off.
Ooh.
The process was described by a contemporary as the prisoner is generally tied to a gun and the upper part of the small of his back resting against the muzzle. When the gun is fired, his head is seen to go straight up into the air some 40 or 50 feet. The arms fly off right and left, high up into the air, and fall at perhaps 100 yards distance. The legs drop to the ground beneath the muzzle of the gun and the body is literally blown away altogether. Not a vestige to be seen. And then he writes, maybe that's how Dick Turpin died.
I like that. Bring that up.
Thanks for that, Valorum.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they did during the Indian Mutiny of 1857?
Is that right?
I believe
Additional knowledge there. Wow. Very good, very good.
That doesn't even seem like a proper execution method. That just seems like some soldiers were bored.
bored / torturous methods, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, because you know, there's that whole thing about the head. Like, was it 20 seconds or a minute? If you're beheaded, your head lives.
Brain. Right, yeah. The nerves still making.
Yeah. So, would your last thought be the whole kind of like wee sensation of your head flying through the air?
I mean, you must also get instantly massively concussed if, like, I mean, surely it just blows straight through your head.
Yes, that's a good point.
Like, yes. Yeah, I mean, your brain's gonna have instant damage. Significantly, I'd imagine.
These observations. This, I mean, this is the insight we expect from this podcast, isn't it?
That's the most redundant observation
ever. If you get shot in the head, you're likely to have some sort of significant brain damage.
With a cannon as well.
Yeah. The cannon.
You're likely to.
Yeah, no, you know, there's not... Everything you said there is completely true, Alex.
I can't complain. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, I think what I mean is, like, unlike a guillotine, it's not like a clean cut, you know.
This is true.
You're not going to have your head thinking for, like, 20 seconds in the basket at the bottom. You're just...
I mean, whether even with the head being cut clean off, you're actually able to think and feel and see and all this kind of thing is debatable, right?
I
need to actually look into that. That'd be really interesting to do. But I imagine that you wouldn't be able to actually feel and see, etc. Especially not if your head's blown off by a cannon.
Okay. Moving on, but keep these execution methods coming in. I think this should be a recurring thing.
Actually, I'm quite interested.
So Alan Partridge. How would you like to be executed?
Okay. So I've got a comment from Cassandra Kapinski, who points out, and this was a surprise to us as well, Uncovered has gone private. Sad face.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Stories from the Bunker episodes that I like to rewatch when my insomnia hits. I'm really, really sorry, Cassandra. That was a big surprise for us as well. I'm not entirely sure what the story is there, but I think we covered it in our first podcast on Just Interesting. We kind of left that channel, the stuff that was there, we didn't anticipate necessarily that they were gonna make it all private, but we had no say in the content really. And what they did with them.
It's disappointing. It's disappointing for us because, you know, it was a lot of work for a number of years. And we, you know, when we left, we knew that, of course, we wouldn't have any kind of say or ownership over it. But at the same time, you hope that if it's not, you know, causing anyone any issues and it'd still be making the owners of it money, then they'd keep it up, right? Very disappointing. But it is what it is. Maybe they'll put it back live at some point, maybe not. Unfortunately, we don't have a say over that, as you say, Alex.
We've had a number of comments in the last couple of weeks pointing out that things on Uncovered, the old channel, have been privatized, and it sounds like the whole thing now, which is a real shame. It's really touching to know that people are still watching, or were still watching, that content and still care about that, and still it's touching that they assume we still have control over that, because we certainly have an emotional investment in it. We made all that content for a very long time. And quite proud of it. It's a shame it's no longer publicly available. And like Martin says, maybe it'll come back on. But at the moment, it seems like we've been doing nothing for the last 7 years. And Just Interesting has just appeared out of the blue.
Maybe it fits with the whole lockdown thing, but maybe we need to get a new bunker. Maybe that's the answer.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe there have to be a bringing back of, maybe, you know, I'm not promising anything, but bringing back of certain strands potentially in the future, in a slightly different guise, perhaps. We'll see. We shall see.
Yeah, we're not committing to anything, and we're certainly not declaring a statement of intent, because...
No.
We don't want to get sued. Hello.
From the lockdown center.
Stories from the cellar.
Well, I've got a comment from Ewan Burtwell, who suggested that maybe there is time for change, because he said, maybe a rename to the Just Castration podcast, which I'm guessing is a reference to the fact that for the last few weeks, each episode of the podcast has mentioned a fact about castration.
You've mentioned a fact about castration.
Yeah, let's be more specific here.
I want to be specific about that.
I have brought information to the table when castration has been mentioned. So, you know, I've been there to inform and entertain, I hope. And I just want to point out that I have not mentioned castration in this podcast. So
until this second,
do you have any more facts?
Any more facts about castration, or are we on a bit of a dry spell this week?
I believe one fact I haven't mentioned yet is that it was one of the five kind of main punishments in ancient China.
There we go. There's your castration fact of the week.
Chinese legal system had 5 key punishments, and one of them was castration.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For women, it was social. Exclusion.
Oh,
your banner.
Confinement. That was the word. Confinement. Yeah.
Oh, confinement. Okay. Mm. I mean, it still sounds maybe slightly preferable, doesn't it, to castration, perhaps. Mm.
True.
Well, that is a genuinely interesting fact. I feel like the comment section is slowly morphing into execution methods and castration facts.
Mm. I mean, we could combine the two, I'm sure, in some kind of guise, couldn't we?
I'm all for it.
Oh, yeah. You're all for it. Okay, Alex. Martin, I smell an experiment coming on.
Oh, dear.
That would not smell good. this experiment smells of balls.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
Seriously, they smell like hamster. What's going on?
Oh, my goodness. With that said and done, shall we move on to the main topic of the week?
Yes.
And this is something that is probably more interesting than our viewers, our listeners have come accustomed to. And that is the revelation that there could be, signs of life on Venus.
Yeah.
Venus. So, of course, life on Mars is very much a hot topic, isn't it? That's been going around and debated for a long time.
Mm.
But Venus is hardly ever spoken about, is it? We wouldn't expect life to potentially exist on Venus.
Literally, if you asked me, I would have said Venus, last place in the solar system of life.
Close to the sun. Incredibly hot. It's made up of what, 95% carbon dioxide. When you think about the Earth, it's made up of 0.04, I think, of carbon dioxide.
Right. Yeah.
So you think about how inhospitable that is as a result.
Yeah, you kind of think of Venus as like a warning of like what would happen to Earth if we messed this up, you know? It's the planet that's gone horribly wrong.
Exactly. It's basically a hellscape, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, 464 degrees Celsius on the surface?
Yes. Yeah. And covered in sulfuric acid, isn't it? Like 90% of the atmosphere is pure sulfuric acid.
It's telling that it's not the closest planet to the sun, but it is the hottest planet. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's why it makes it even more remarkable that this particular team has found that there's phosphine, the gas phosphine. And this is a particular molecule that's very much associated with life on Earth. So it's excreted from the guts of animals like penguins, and it's also found in things like swamps as well. So it's something that basically is a signal of life on Earth. And this has been found roughly 50 kilometers up from the planet's surface. So they're asking this question: could there be life on Venus as a result of this discovery?
Yeah, because I think it's important to point out there's no like natural method for this gas to be produced except for like with organic matter, like with animals and that kind of thing. To them, those kind of chemical processes, and you can produce it artificially in factories, but there aren't any factories on Venus that we've seen anyway, unless there's an underground civilization. So, yeah, I mean, it's weird how... Basically, they're asking the question, how did this gas get there?
I think more importantly, they know that phosphine is produced on Earth by extremophile bacteria or microbes that live in extreme conditions. And I think, actually, it costs them energy to produce phosphine as a byproduct of their ingestion and egestion cycles. So, as far as we know, it's a thing that's only produced naturally. And I think more tellingly, there's very little of it made on Earth. But if what microbes do exist on Earth were producing phosphine at 10% of the rate that they do actually produce it, you would have levels similar to what they've detected on Venus, I think.
Yes, it's only, statistic. Yeah, it's only what, 10 to 20 parts per billion. Atmospheric molecules, but in the context of what they found and the context of how much of this actually exists in the atmosphere is actually a lot.
So basically the scientists are saying that if this thing exists on Venus and exists in the atmosphere, at the level where it's only 30 degrees C, so perfectly habitable for microbes, then there could be a lot of microbes on there compared to the ones that we know make it on Earth.
What would this life even look like if it did, if it was discovered?
Ooh, it would look presumably microscopic. So we'd have to use a microscope to look at it. And I guess it would be something akin to bacteria that we're familiar with on Earth. But even within bacteria, there's a huge variety in terms of shapes and formation.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the most likely thing, isn't it? We're talking about alien living organisms here, aren't we? But certainly not the traditional grey aliens. We're talking about, you know, tiny, tiny little microbes, aren't we?
Yeah.
But it does certainly open up the question to, okay, on these traditionally inhospitable planets, could much more life exist than we ever realised before? Just in other forms that we don't necessarily know about yet. It'd be interesting to know exactly the makeup of these microbes. Will we find out? I hope so.
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Sorry,
I was going to say, they've sent probes to Venus before, haven't they?
But they haven't been very successful, have they? They've kind of really burnt up.
The atmosphere, the pressure in the atmosphere is too great, and the probes don't last very long. They've broken down,
basically.
Yeah, they just get crushed.
It's mad. It's really scary to think about. But there are some exciting projects that are like being worked on, and it's mainly like sending balloons into the atmosphere to scan and take this kind of temperature readings and do a lot of other things in Venus's atmosphere. And there's also another exciting project where they could send humans to Venus, but in like airships in the atmosphere, which I find really cool. I think I like that idea, because Venus is closer to us than Mars, isn't it? But everyone's focused on Mars, and I think we should take another look at Venus and don't write it off just yet.
We're saying closer, but it was roughly 150 million kilometers away.
That's a fair distance, but yeah,
it's a little bit of a distance.
We could do that. I mean, I can't imagine. It's just, if you're a human out there, like the heat from the sun and the radiation from the sun, the levels and layers of protection you would need just to survive each day would be incredible. And I'm sure they would train them and prepare them for it. But I mean, that's a mission, even more so than Mars, I would be reluctant to take up in terms of seeing my family again, you know.
Yeah,
but because what astonished me about this headline is, apart from the excitement of it, like, oh, we might have found life on another planet, is the fact that so far up to this point within our solar system, all the talk has been about first Mars, but more importantly, Europa, the moon of Jupiter, which is the ice moon. And although the surface is completely covered in ice, underneath they're pretty sure that there are oceans, and they believe that those oceans could be home, because they're water, and because, as far as we know, water is the one universal element to the existence of life. They think there could be life forms, probably microbial, but possibly bigger, in the oceans underneath the ice on Europa. And we know that it's possible for organisms to live in those extremely cold, dark, high-pressure ocean environments, because if you go to the bottom of the seas on Earth, you come across not just microbes and that just live down there in these extreme conditions, but also fish, shrimp, octopuses, and things like that, miles deep in extreme cold, in utter blackness, and with very little to feed on, and yet you've got these complex life forms living there. And wonderfully, it's like when you go to a forest, particularly if you go to forests in like the rainforest, you know, where there's incredible variety of species. Or if you go, again, to the oceans and look at the diversity of life down there, and you see some things, plants and animals, are just so weird, so bizarre, and it always boggles my mind, because I think every time I think, oh, alien life, I can't imagine what it would look like, then you see that, oh, there's this really bizarre creature on Earth that I would think of as completely alien if I met it accidentally in the street. Maybe alien life would look like something on Earth, or maybe there'd be something even weirder again living in under the ice on Europa, or deep in the canyons of Mars, or high in the atmosphere of Venus. It's quite exciting, really.
It really is.
It is. It's that unknown. Yeah. And they're planning some more exploration of Europa, aren't they, in a couple of years' time? There's some more studying on what exactly is going on there. So that'll be interesting to find out. I think, do you guys think that in general we're at a stage where space exploration for the future of humanity, but also just for discovering extraterrestrial life, now that we've seen that there's water on various moons and that there's potentially life on Venus, do you think that funding will increase and that going forward we'll see more space exploration? Or do you think we're at a time in our lives where it seems like that frontier isn't necessarily coming up with the results that we want to see? And if it hasn't already, then is it going forward?
I've got two words for you. Space Force. Yeah. I've got two more words for you, and more seriously, Elon Musk.
Well, it comes back to him a lot, doesn't it?
In Musk we trust.
I think it's an interesting question. Sorry, Alex. To make a quick point about to elaborate on why I said Elon Musk. It's because it's both exciting that we're now in an era where private space travel is probably going to happen in the near future. And you've got these private individuals and organizations that are leading the way, and it's absolutely incredible. But it reminds us that when you privatize something like space exploration, you operate at the whims of the owners. So Elon Musk is nuts about Mars, and that's what we're going to get. But if Elon Musk or someone like him isn't interested in Venus, then we need government organizations like NASA or international organizations like we have in Europe to make these explorations, right?
It's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of like follow on from that, I reckon, we would see more interest in space when the technology to like mine and bring back asteroids exist.
You mean when we can gain from it substantially?
Yeah, exactly. I think once we can do that, that's when space is really going to kick off. So whether that happens in our lifetimes or not, I hope so. I really do. I hope that, I hope we get to see people land on Mars. I think that would be incredible.
I think we will. I think we might do in our lifetime.
Fingers crossed.
It'd
be really exciting. And what do you think would happen even if we just found microbial life on Venus? But what do you think, would that send shockwaves through the planet? Do you think that would shake people's belief systems entirely, or how do you think people would react to scientists finding microbial life on Venus?
I don't think it would. I think the wider scientific community, it would maybe broaden their horizons for searching for alien life, right? The focus wouldn't necessarily be on Mars and maybe looking on the moon and elsewhere. It would we'd maybe looking a little bit outside of the circle, the traditional circle of where we'd find alien life. There's been suggestions, of course, of water, as you mentioned earlier, Robin, of water being found on various moons and various planets, and potentially there being larger organisms like fish, as you say, that could exist on these planets hypothetically. Does finding microbes on Venus change the game?
That's a really good point.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure it does, but really? I think it broadens it. I think it broadens it and maybe opens our eyes to the fact that life could exist even in some of the most traditionally inhospitable planets. I don't think it necessarily changes anything, especially for those, for the layman in society who's wondering whether life will exist elsewhere.
Yeah, I'd agree with you in terms of the impact to everyday people, because I think most people have already made up their minds whether or not they would accept the notion of alien life as a good thing or a bad thing. Either they're atheists who think alien life is a threat, or they're atheists who think alien life is just the done thing that they expect to find at some point, or they're theists who think alien life is just an extension of whatever deities plan for the universe, or they're theists who think alien life is just more of a test of faith, like fossils under the earth. But I think for scientists, it makes a huge difference because so far the search for life, let's say, for example, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, but also just the search for any kind of life, whether or not it's intelligent, has focused solely on the rationale that water is the key ingredient for life, because that's all we know. Life on Earth, all of it, the common thing they have is water. So they, when they look for planets that might harbor life, they always look for Earth-like planets, and not just in terms of size and shape and position from their sun, but also the presence of water. That's what they look for. So in a weird way, it's exciting because simultaneously you've got these scientists who are like, if there's microbial life on Venus without the presence of water, then we've got this exciting thing where we can broaden the scope of our study and our search, widen the net, and we can possibly increase our chances of finding alien life. That's amazing. But at the same time, you've probably got a relatively small number of scientists with relatively small budgets and resources looking for alien life, and here they are suddenly like, my God, man, the only thing we had to help us focus our search was that water was the key ingredient, and now you're saying water is not the key ingredient?
Yeah.
How long is it going to take to make the, to conduct this study? We're going to have to look at every single sodding planet. This is going to take forever.
Yeah. So, and then that just links directly back into my question of, do you think that funding for space exploration and looking for alien life out there will increase going forward in relation to discoveries like these? And that all just links up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think you're both right that at this point in human history, the development of space exploration in our society means that it'll only really develop meaningfully when there's profit to be had.
Yes, yeah. Whether that's, as you say, Alex, mining for resources, or whether that's space tourism, which seems to be the path that the most people, that you know, a lot of companies are going down or looking into, because there's obviously an immediate financial gain to that. We shall see.
Yeah,
we shall see.
I mean, it does have a pretty scary implication if they did find life and the conclusions were that life in the universe is much more common than we previously thought. Because then it kind of goes back to the Fermi paradox of like, well, if life is so common, where is everyone? Where's all the, why have we not been visited by aliens? Or have we been visited and we just don't know it, if we can't recognize them? You know what I mean?
Interestingly, there's a potential solution to that paradox, which is, we've all heard of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, but there's also the project called Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which is partly founded on the principle of are we living in the simulation, or the alien zoo hypothesis, which is, if we are being observed by aliens, or if we're in some kind of alien simulation, searching for messages from them is meaningless, because they won't send us any messages. They're trying to keep their presence and their existence secret. They're just trying to observe us. If we send messages out to them, then particularly if those messages are, hey, we know you're out there, please send us a message. We're going to provoke a response. Yeah. So the Fermi paradox, the potential solution to the Fermi paradox is the alien zoo hypothesis, and a potential solution to confirming the alien zoo hypothesis is this project called Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which is kind of like a fringe version of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And I think there's an official organization which was founded in 2015 to lead that effort, but it's also just an ongoing effort that's been happening since SETI was set up as well.
I'm a big fan of that theory. I kind of hope that's true. They're just planning a welcome surprise party when we're ready to, you know, and they keep checking in every now and then, and they're just like, they watch a few minutes of the Alex Jones podcast or the InfoWars, and they're like, they're not ready.
Every Star Trek fan knows that they're waiting for us to achieve warp speed, and until that happens, we'll never make alien contact.
Yeah. It's getting further away, let's be honest. By the week, it's getting further away. or maybe they're going to come in as the saviors when the planet's on fire.
Well, that'd be nice.
Maybe. Would you guys like a weekly, well, our weekly quiz? Are you ready for our weekly quiz?
Of course, absolutely. Yes.
Good. As always, there are 10 questions, and the theme of this week is knowledge general.
Okay, so, I was worried for a moment. I thought it was going to be the actual theme. Yeah. I was like, what?
you had me there, Martin.
Almost got you. No, general knowledge, 10 questions, and a bonus question if we're tired. But we always do it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, can I hear your buzzers, please? Alex.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've gone for a tried and tested method as I'm up against,
of course,
Robin.
I think everyone will be able to sing along to your buzzer.
The French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
There you go.
Very good. It's so a California good. Champagne.
By it's Paul a California Masson. Champagne.
And Robin, what have you gone for this week? Is it traditional or have you gone
it
rogue?
Isn't. This is a new one for me. I think a new one for this podcast. Okay. It is.
Give me a drink, bartender.
I like it.
I like it. That's like a good John Wayne impression. That's from a viral video from 4 years ago. It's called Give Me a Drink, Bartender. So
fair I like enough. It. No context, but we'll go with it. Okay. So, question number one.
Yep.
What is the highest grossing Pixar movie of all time?
There's a California.
Give me a drink, bartender.
I think, Alex, you got there just in time.
I'm going to go the highest grossing of all time. I'm going to go for Toy Story 4.
Ooh, it is not Toy Story 4.
Phew, I thought you had it. Okay, I'm going to go with Finding Dory.
Nope.
If it was Finding Dory, I would have been absolutely fuming.
Okay.
Okay.
Give me a drink, bartender. Oh.
I don't know who got there. That was very, very close. Do you guys have a thought on who got there first?
I think I heard Robin's just as I hit play. So okay. I'll give it to
that's
Robin.
It's very honest of you.
Oh, that's very kind. I'll go for the next obvious one then. Toy Story 3.
It's not Toy Story 3.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay. Now, this is interesting.
There's a California champagne.
I'm going to guess, is it Inside Out? Is that what it's called? Inside Out?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's not Inside Out.
Oh
my goodness.
Can we have a clue? Is...
Give me a drink, bartender.
Yes, Robin?
Is it Incredibles 2?
It's Incredibles 2.
I know it's going to sound like I'm making this up, but Incredible. No, I was debating between Inside Out and Incredibles 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn, 1.2 billion. Yeah. 1.2 billion it grossed.
I want it to be, this is really arsey, but I kind of want to, my instinct was, is that all?
Yeah, well, it's Pixar. You think everyone goes to see them, right?
Yeah, you think like, Avengers and Star Wars level gross. I mean, 1.2 billion is nothing to sniff at.
It's not bad. It's not bad. You'd be happy with it, wouldn't you? But yeah. You think that their top would match those big blockbusters? Apparently not quite. It's not quite. Maybe that would change. Well, not with the cinemas being closed.
Loved it. So.
Okay. Question number two. What is a female cat commonly known as?
It's always been celebrated for its excellence.
Alex. you buzzed in? No.
Yep. Is it a kit?
You buzzed in? No.
Oh, okay.
You buzzed, you've got to answer.
I've got no idea. I know nothing about that. Yeah, I mean,
female.
I guess.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Yes.
Yeah, I know this is foxes, but is it a vixen?
It's not a vixen, unfortunately.
No.
Yeah, this is. I'm kicking myself. Idea. Is this something that we have definitely heard of?
You've heard of the word, definitely. Hmm. So a male one is often called a Tom, isn't it?
Oh.
Tom. Whereas a female one
is
not called a Tom, and it's not called a traditional name either, as you clue.
Oh, well.
Hmm. Is it a bobcat?
It's not a bob. It's not, no.
Tom and Bob.
Yeah, because Tomcat is a thing. Bobcat, yeah.
See you going.
I mean, that doesn't really. I'm still clueless. I'm no. floundering in the wilderness, in the dark, looking for Dick Turpin. I have no clue.
If you don't get it, then I'll just let you guys know.
Oh, you know, I have another clue. Another clue. I need the points here, Martin.
Yeah, another
Do you
clue.
Want another clue. Okay. Okay. Fingers on buzzers, probably for this one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's a member of the royal family.
Ah, the French champagne.
Yes, Alex.
Kate.
No. It's not called a Kate.
Kate Kat.
A Kit Kat,
yeah.
It's called a Kit Kat.
I mean, that's not a bad guess. That's a really weird clue.
Is it?
I'm sure it's true. I'm not refusing the clue. I'm just kind of puzzled. Yeah.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Yes, Robin.
Is it a queen?
It's a queen.
Oh my god, of course it is. Oh, I'm such an idiot.
It's a queen. Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
But males aren't called king, they're called Tom.
They're called Tom, yeah. Tomcat and Queen.
Feel bad for them.
Should be called Philip, really, shouldn't they?
I'm such an idiot.
Question number three.
Okay.
If a substance has a pH level of above 7, is it acidic or alkaline?
Give me a drink, bartender.
This is hopefully your GCSE science coming back in here, Robin.
Oh, I know this. This is a
mistake because it's 50-50. So is it alkaline?
Oh, fuck's sake.
It is alkaline. Yes. Well done. 3-0.
Sorry.
It's a good start. It's a good start. But Alex, you've got plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
I knew that.
Loads of questions left.
I'm not in the game. I'm not in the game. I need to get in the game. That's what I need to do. I need to get
yourself in the head a few times.
You're close. You knew that one, so you're close.
Come on. Yeah.
Okay, question number four.
You didn't see that, but I did just slap myself in the head.
I've advocated violence here, haven't I? Live on a podcast. That's not good. If he does nothing to himself, I didn't tell him to. Question number four. What does the W in George W. Bush stand for?
Give me a drink, bartender.
That was Alex.
It was Alex.
That,
what's your thoughts?
Martin, I believe, is Wilfred.
It's not Wilfred.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And I'll be honest, I was grasping.
Is it Walker?
It's Walker. It's Walker, and it's 4-0.
Walker.
George Walker Bush.
Yeah.
Walker Bush.
Really?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I think it's one that maybe outside of the US, people just think of the W, don't they? But they don't necessarily know what the W stands for.
No, reasonable to assume it's an ordinary name, like William or Wilfred.
Mm. Yes, very true. Alex, you've got to properly get your head in the game now, mate, because it's 4-0.
I feel like there's some bias here, I feel.
In what way?
I don't get the impression the Quizmaster is rooting for the other side.
Oh, right, for me. Yeah, I mean, I think the Quizmaster wants it to be an interesting quiz.
Well, as a Quizmaster, you don't want it to be done by question 60. That's not fun.
That's true. Yeah. No, Alex is going to make his comeback now. This is where Alex gets the next six. And Robin is left in shame.
Maybe.
Hope so.
Question five. In Norse mythology, my appeal to you here, Alex, which goddess rules over Helheim?
Ah, the French champagne.
Just trying to remember God of War, and if this came up, I don't think it did. Is it Freya?
It's not Freya.
Oh, okay.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Yes, Robin.
Is it Hell?
It's Hell.
Of course it's Hell. Yeah. Of course it's Hell. And it did come up in God of War. Yeah. Yeah.
Bloody hell, you're doing well.
Lucky. Look at the draw.
Look at the draw. Well, you knew it.
Do you know what pisses me off most about this, Robin? It's that you're such a humble person. You're like, oh, this is just luck. Oh, it's all this. As you're absolutely crushing me in this quiz. Just own it. Just you know.
That's very kind of you.
Just tell me I'm an idiot.
I feel bad.
I don't think knowledge is not luck, though, Robin, is it? You know, maybe the questions, you knowing them, is luck. But knowing them itself is far from
luck. But there's also,
you've studied.
Also just, you know, hitting the... you hitting the buzz at the right time, you know, and getting through before Alex does, and that's not. Well, that's
you've seen what I've been doing, Robin. I've been hitting the buzzer every single time, not even knowing,
and getting it
just
wrong,
so I can have a guess.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of time for Alex to equalise. That's the important.
Well, you've got
to
get the next five in a row, right? but let's give it a go. Okay, Alex, question number six.
Here we go.
Come on. What is a dried plum called?
The French champagne.
Oh,
yes, boy.
Is it a prune?
It's a prune. It's 5-1.
Got
here
it.
We go.
He's in the game.
The comeback starts
back
here.
Question number seven. Who holds the record for the most number one singles for a female artist?
The French champagne.
Number one singles. I'm going to go for, is it Lady Gaga?
It is not the poker face lady. Gaga. Gaga.
That's
Gaga.
A good question. Yeah.
Unfortunately not. No, it's not.
Oh, I have a couple of like clarification questions, but I feel like it is unfair to ask them before I make a guess.
Yeah, no. Let's have a guess first.
You can ask the questions, but then that puts me back in the game.
Most number ones for female artists. Who would have like multiple number ones more than Lady Gaga? And oof, is it Madonna?
It's Madonna.
I actually just want to say Robin didn't buzz, so.
Oh.
So I was disqualified. Yeah, Alex gets a guess. Yeah.
Is it Madonna, Martin?
Technically, you're right, and it is Madonna.
Oh my god! What? No, I'm not having that. The victory.
I don't think
there
so.
Are rules.
It wouldn't even
if
work.
We don't obey the rules, then it's anarchy, mate. It's anarchy. So.
Turned into an anarchist society.
I don't want to win this way. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't think there's much chance.
It's gonna. It can be. But it can be 6-4. That's fine.
It is 6-1. You got it right, Robin. Yeah. Well done.
Oh, that's unfair.
It's really not unfair. It's perfectly fine. It's justified.
I mean,
well done.
This would be classic Robin if by the end of the quiz and you're winning 9-1, you're going to just be like, yeah, but I didn't buzz. Like, it's 9-1.
Yeah, we could have gone either way.
Question. Could have turned the tide.
It's true. Could have gone another way.
Question number eight. When or in which decade? Let's be a little bit broader. In which decade was the word robot invented?
The French champagne.
Yes.
I believe that was in 1880.
Okay. Well, you'd believe wrong.
Damn it.
Because it was not 1880.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Was it the 1910s?
Nope.
Damn it.
Can we have a
any
clue?
More for any more for any more?
Is that like this?
I mean,
yeah.
Okay. Okay, fine. It was in the 20th century.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Champagne. I think you got there first, Robin. Robot Robin.
Oh, I'm going to get this wrong. 1920s?
It was the 1920s.
Oh, thank you.
And it was actually first used by the playwright called Carol Capek, who used it in his play Rossum's Universal Robots. I hadn't come across this play before.
Yeah.
This night. And actually comes from the Slavic word robota, which apparently loosely translates as forced labour.
I think I have heard this fact before, but yeah, it's like I remember it being surprisingly early. Was the yeah?
Okay, yeah, but yeah, yeah.
I think that was what I was thinking.
I think it's one of those where you're like, okay, it's got to be fairly recent because of robots, or it's going to be really old and come from like the Latin.
Yeah,
for something.
I think it's surprisingly late for me actually, because what would you describe a robot as before that? You know, idea.
Yes,
I guess the concept didn't properly exist.
No, not I mean, yeah. Not as a proper as a robot, you know.
Machines.
Anyway, yes, well done. That's 7-1.
Yeah, all right, it's fine. It's fine. We're past that now.
Sorry, Alex.
Okay.
This is what I'm talking. Just. Oh, I'd prefer it if at the end of each question you're like, "Ha, suck it, you idiot."
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It'd be easier to digest, I think.
It would be.
You could get angry. can you?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't get angry.
I can't feel like I can justifiably get angry, and it's
you have to be angry internally.
And that's making me angry in this vicious cycle.
Hulk out. Go on. Go for it.
Stop encouraging me. Stop being so nice.
Question number 9.
Okay.
How long, on average, it varies, is a horse pregnant for?
The French champagne.
We'll go for the closest month.
Oh, I'm not a farmer, so I'm not near horses. I don't know. 7 months? Is it 7 months?
It's not 7 months.
I'm also not a horse breeder.
That would be quite a revelation, wouldn't it? We're actually both horse breeders.
In my spare time, I breed horses. Is it 9 months?
Sorry?
Is it 9 months?
It's not 9 months. It's not the same as a human. No.
Well, I thought that might be the question. Trick, the trick.
Yeah. The trick, yeah. It could have been. It could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are horses easier or harder to make?
It's going to quickly make a horse.
Is it 12 months?
It's not 12 months.
Is it? Oh, I'll buzz in this time.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Very good.
18 months.
No, it's actually 11 months.
I was pretty close. Months.
You're very,
you were very close. It can be, Alex, I might give you that because it can be up to 12 months.
Yeah,
it's like
There you go, gets that point.
It's usually 11, but it can extend to 12. So you get a point there.
Thank you. I needed that, I'll be honest.
Yeah, you did.
You deserved it, Alex. That's the big point. Yeah. You deserved it.
I think so. 12, it would have won a closest wins, and it is technically can happen that way. So yeah.
Doubly right. There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Question 10. Who became the head of state in Nazi Germany after Hitler's death?
Oh.
That's a really good question. I mean...
Give me a drink, bartender.
Yes, bartender.
I'm going to assume this is a trick question and the answer is Heinrich Himmler? Although he committed suicide too.
It's not a trick question and it's not Heinrich Himmler.
Okay.
Probably get demonetized now for that, won't we?
Is it begin? Does it Stirlitz or something? Stirlitz? Does it begin with S?
No.
Oh, okay.
It does not begin with S.
Do you know what I'm trying to think of? I'm trying to think of that Mitchell and Webb sketch when there's the new Führer, and I'm trying to think of his name.
Yeah,
this is a great question. I genuinely never thought about this.
I watched the old, what's it called, the world at War, the old DVDs, the colorized versions.
Yeah.
And there's an episode on this person. Mm. It's largely about this person.
If this is a clue, Martin, this is not a great.
No, it's not. I'm just saying why it came to my mind as a question for the quiz.
Right. Yeah.
Can we have a clue of what his name began with?
His surname?
Yeah.
Yeah.
D. Should be quite a big clue.
It's not really. Dummkopf.
he was a big fish before the end of the war. That's another clue.
Alex, I feel like we should know this.
D.
It was a big fish.
Yeah, you keep saying it.
I mean, I feel, okay. I mean, I don't know my fish either, so.
Yeah, I'm like, are there any English names for fish?
His name doesn't have any kind of connection with the word fish.
Why are we emphasizing he was a big fish?
That was totally a clue.
Because he was, it would a cryptic clue word, a crossword, it probably would be good enough. Because his role previously was related to fish in some way. Not directly, but water. Let's just say water.
He was head of the Navy. Let's just say
he was. Yeah, he was the Chief Admiral. Let's just say that.
I don't even. This, I don't know. The Chief Admiral
doesn't help.
Indeed. Does that not help? This doesn't help. Okay, I'll just say it was Carl Dönitz.
Dönitz.
Good old Carl.
Yep. Does that ring any bells?
Yeah.
Not really.
I think I was thinking of that when with my guess.
You did say it. You said it to the end.
It's something Stirlitz. Yeah, Dönitz. I think it's how they pronounce that in the thing. It's fine. I didn't know it. I got it.
The thing was, Alex, when you said it to the end, I was like, I don't want to say it's close because then it could have given an additional clue. You went
for Stirlitz or something, didn't you?
Yeah, Stirlitz. And I was like,
I don't know Carl, though. Carl Dönitz.
Carl. So how long was he the leader of Germany for?
Oh, like a month. It was not very long at all. Have a look.
Yeah. He was
head of state for 23 days.
Yeah.
From the 30th of April to the 23rd of May. The 24th of May.
And was he responsible? Was he like the official guy who surrendered to the
Allies? Yes. Yeah. No, he surrendered. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I guess his legacy is he brought World War II to an end.
Yeah, I guess so. And was the head of the U-boat menace, wasn't he?
What happened to him? Do we know what happened to him afterwards? Was he like a war criminal charged as?
He was sentenced to about a decade in prison, and then he was released, and he lived in Germany until he died.
Oh, right.
In like the 70s or 80s or something. So he lived until he was quite old.
Yeah. Gosh.
Let's have a look.
Because that was the joke in that. Have you seen that sketch?
No.
He's like, he comes in and they say like, oh, the Führer is dead. You're the new Führer. And he's like, I've got these massive plans for Germany. Like, we're going to work on like social economic plans and stuff. And they're like, yeah, we actually just want you to call this number. And
say I remember the sketch.
We surrender.
Yeah, no, he died. He died in 1980, aged 89.
Wow, he lived a long life.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah. So there we go. Right, bonus question.
I need my
Closest wins. How many steps do you have to climb to reach the top of the Empire State Building? Good luck.
Is this closest wins?
Closest wins.
Give me a drink, bartender.
Yes, Robin, what are you thinking?
1,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice round number.
1,000, okay.
I'm going to go 1,001.
Alex, you are closest.
Yes.
it's 1,576.
Okay.
That will get you to the top. So quite a few steps. Yes. Get your hiking boots on.
They could reduce it if they made the steps really big.
Yeah. Really long steps.
Could, yeah.
Really dangerous. It just reminds me of a video I remember seeing on there is an annual race, I think, in New York to run up the Empire State Building.
No, really?
The steps of it. Yeah, I believe that's the case.
That can't. I think Spider-Man wins every time.
That can't be safe. What if there's a fire?
Maybe it's time trials. I don't know. I don't know if this still happens. I'm not sure. I'll have a look afterwards. I might be completely making this up.
Imagine you're working there and there's just like a massive race going on in the stairwell.
Yeah. It must close the building for that day, right? Surely.
I'm going to have to look this up now. Empire State Building stairs race. Yeah, it's called the Empire State Building run-up race.
Cool.
And it happens every year, although it's not happening this year because of COVID. Or it didn't happen.
What date does it normally happen on?
May. So it's 11th of May 2021.
Oh, the 11th of May. Lucky it's not the 11th of September.
Why would you say that?
I guess it would make things harder.
Yeah. There'll be probably an inappropriate time for them to have that.
Yeah, but a bit too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon. There was it was on the Super Show podcast where they were discussing I think it was on the Super Show podcast, they were discussing too soon, whether something's too soon.
Hmm.
Was it the Super Show? I can't remember. Anyway, shout out to those guys.
It's the kind of thing that they talk about, yeah.
Yeah. And and is it too soon? It's been 20 years, roughly. It was 19 years. 19 years.
19
years a few days ago.
Mm.
I mean, it's very much in the minds of everyone who lived around the time, right? So when does something become not too soon?
We spoke about this in the podcast last week. Are you thinking of us?
I could be thinking of us, yeah.
Because we were saying how Alexander the Great, people don't think of his atrocities. Right.
It might have been us. It might have been us.
Because it was so far away. But whereas Abraham Lincoln, some people might be like, ooh. Which surprises me, because that seems like quite a lot. You know, people make World War II jokes and stuff.
Yes.
And that's not seen as, you know, you can make an Adolf Hitler joke and that's not seen as too soon, I guess.
Like Martin said,
it's like it's once you ascribe an identity to the people that you're talking about, that's when it becomes too soon.
Yeah, and there's certain, of course, there's certain topics of World War II that you wouldn't make a joke about, and rightly so.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it too? Yeah.
Although, is it too soon? Let us know your thoughts, please, either in the comments below on YouTube or by sending us a message on Twitter at JInterestingYT.
Exactly. Don't be too harsh on Robot Robin as well, because he's only being programmed. It's not his. You know, he cannot be held responsible for his inappropriate comments. Which is lucky.
I should thank you. That's a get out clause. Yeah,
castration got brought back up, as did. What were you saying about love juice earlier on as well?
Oh, love juice. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you meant by that, but I'm sure it's probably something disgusting too.
Martin, you're such a sexist.
I'm not even going there. But where our audience should go, though, if they feel inclined, is over to our Patreon for a little more interesting, where we did discuss Roger Stone. So check that out. That was a perfect segue. And and thank you both for joining me on this episode. And
thank you for that excellent quiz.
And hopefully, even after the shambles of a podcast, people will join us next time.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. And hope you have a nice week.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.